Before we commence today's sermon, let's take a moment to put our hands together to worship the conqueror, the sage, the one who crossed the tumultuous seas of samsara, the Lord Buddha, by chanting the Namaskara three times, all together and with me. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Today, I wanted to start off by reminding a saying that our teachers, but not only our teachers, many people talk about. And I think it's something that is very conducive to our path to Nibbana. And the saying is, how you do anything is how you do everything. Now, you know, how you do anything is how you do everything. You know, sometimes you don't really agree with that. You think that can't be, right? Because how I do, you know, how I consume food isn't how I, you know, do my job. I eat like this, but do my job like this. I walk like this, but talk like this. So how can how you do anything is how you do everything? Now, it may seem as though, you know, it's not really something that is, number one, possible. Number two, is it important for our own salvation? Is it important for us to know, for us to attain Nibbana? The answer is, number one, yes, it's important. Because you can tell a lot about a person by how they do what they do. So if I was to ask you, ladies and gentlemen, what does your house look like? What does your room look like? What does your fridge look like? What does your YouTube recommendations look like? Put them all together and we've got a pretty decent image of who you are. You know, back in the past, the way a teacher would choose their students is by simply asking them, you know, tidy up this area. Tidy up this small area. And while the student is cleaning, the teacher will watch. If the student, you know, starts sweeping one area and then, you know, seconds later starts doing something else and it quickly changes between tasks, the teacher knows. The student is impatient. If they do something really slowly and, you know, there's no smile on his face or her face, the teacher knows. The student doesn't like this. So something that I've seen that, you know, something that we do in the monastery is that sometimes your teachers will ask you to do various tasks. So the other day I was talking to an Anagarika. And his teacher has given him the task of washing the toilet. And he's coming to me and he's like, you know, my teachers asked me to do this. You know, I don't really want to do this. You know, I don't want to wash the toilets. You know, it's, you know, people will see me and they'll think something of me. And then I realized why the teacher said such a thing. Because how you do anything is how you do everything. However you do, whatever you do, you can make a pretty decent guess on how you do anything and everything. If you're someone, I mean, it's a very common trait amongst people. We like starting things, but we can't continue with it. You know, every year, you know, when we come through a new year's, we, you know, we make a determination, a resolution, you know, this year I'm going to do A, B, and C. And when it comes to third, fourth, fifth month, you forgot what A was and B was and C was because, you know, you have other things to do. Because we're very good, I think as a human race, we're very good at starting things. We're very good at, you know, having good ideas and starting things, but we don't have the discipline or the motivation to keep going. If that is so, what does that say about your journey to Nibbana? You're very good at starting it, but then the monastery has given a good term. It's called soda bottle. We call it in the monastery. You know, once you know these soft drinks. I know it's something that I used to do when I was very small and naive, is, you know, before I give something, say like a soft drink can to someone, I'd make sure I shake it a lot and give it to the person. And when they open it, they spray it with juice and whatnot. But that is the exact same thing as most of our minds. You listen to a sermon, you listen to, you know, a speaker given a very good motivation saying, you know, you can do this, you can attain Nibbana. And then you think, yes, I can do this, I can attain Nibbana. The week goes by and then you go flat. Well, you are bubbling with energy to start off, but then a week goes by and then you're flat. No longer, you know, the first day you thought, you know, today I'm going to do this. I'm going to go do this merit. And then I'm going to go, you know, practice my path. I'm going to stay in the Valley Malua, right, for at least 2 hours. And then when it comes to about a week, you think, Valley Malua, do I have to? Because we all have a very, you know, well, I can't say all, because there are always those, you know, exceptions. Those who have the motivation and the discipline to keep going. But unfortunately, majority have a soda bottle mindset. We start, but we never finish. We always start, we never finish. What does that say about, you know, if the saying, how you do anything is how you do everything, what does that say about our journey to Nibbana? If you have a soda bottle mindset, what does that say about our journey to Nibbana? This is why, you know, Nibbana is just more, is more than anicca dukkha anatta. Nibbana is much more than just learning the Dhamma. Because learning the Dhamma is just knowledge. You know, you can know things. But what is the purpose of knowing things if you don't put it into practice? If it doesn't come into your day-to-day life, what is the purpose? Because the journey to Nibbana isn't just anicca dukkha anatta. The journey to Nibbana is so much more. How much of your precepts do you protect? That is part of your journey to Nibbana. Do you break your 5 precepts? You know, in the morning, our devotees all observe, especially on Saturdays, the 8 precepts. On seal days, we observe, or on poi days, you observe 8, 9. Do you protect them to the maximum you possibly can? Paanadipata veramani. Adinnadana veramani. Kame samichachara o abrakmacharya. Do you, how far do you protect these? Or has it come to the point where you think, you know, just stealing or just taking this won't hurt. A white lie won't hurt. You know, just doing this won't hurt. Has it come to this? where, you know, protecting the precepts or protecting your virtue is become, you know, I will try, but if I can't, I can't. Because how you do anything is how you do everything. Now, I want you all, right, especially our residents in the monastery, residents as in anagarikas, anagarikas, technically residents as well, siddhashravakas, shravikas. You know, every day you come to the monastery or you live in the monastery and you observe the 10 precepts. I want you to remember the first day you observe the 10 precepts. You know, you're told, you know, you're going to observe the 10 precepts. These are the 10 precepts. You know, and do you remember the first day you observed it? The motivation you had to protect it. If ever, you know, if a song ever comes to my mind, I will try to get rid of it ASAP. Because why? Nachigita. Oh no. But now are you relaxed? Do you think, huh, one song won't hurt? Or, you know, the beginning you thought, you know, I will never say something or do something to hurt a fly. And then when you see someone, you say something just to hurt them, you know, slightly. Not a lot, because we're not inhumane. We say something just to, like, you know, poke a bit of fun. You thought that, you know, I'm never gonna take something that doesn't belong to me. And then you think, well, you know, this pencil's on the floor. No one's looking. Can I pick it up and use it? Do you remember the first day you observed these precepts? How much you protected them? Now what? Now see the difference. How do you protect them now? Do you protect them more than you did? If so, you are going on a steady path. If you're protecting the same way, you're going on a steady path. If you're reducing, something's gone wrong. If you're now giving yourself excuses, something's gone wrong. This is why the Jhajjar Nibbana is not just about, you know, the Dhamma. The Dhamma is there and the Dhamma is useful because the Dhamma is what keeps you, you know, bound towards your precepts. Because if you know, like for example, if you know there is no one to hurt, there is no purpose, you understand there's no purpose of saying something to hurt another one. If you understand that, you know, nothing belongs to anyone, you won't go around taking things anymore. Now you know that, you know, there's no purpose of me stealing. When you realize that, you know, songs, dancing, singing, right, wearing and bearing ornaments and all this stuff, no, is not the source of happiness. You no longer have the desire to do those. So by understanding the Dhamma, your the protection of the precept should increase, not decrease. If you're someone who, you know, tries to, you know, to maintain a character, you know, I'm gonna try to be, you know, as a person who doesn't have any defilements. And if you're trying to maintain a character, then again, you have to question, am I on the right path? Because the path to Nibbana is not maintained. Your personality is not something that should be maintained. Because you become someone who's there and then. Someone who's present there and then. If you find it difficult to deal with different people, then you have to ask yourself the question, how much have I actually practiced? If that's if you know, sometimes you get to consume some food that you used to like, and you still feel the same amount of pleasure, you have to ask yourself the question: how much have I practiced? This is why this journey is not just sitting down and sitting down cross-legged under a tree or sat down somewhere contemplating Anishdukkanatha. This is a practical journey. Every waking moment is a moment that you can use to progress further and further. Now, this is not me saying that you haven't practiced and you haven't gone anywhere. You have. Of course you have. Compare yourself to who you were 2 years ago. Compare yourself to who you were a year ago, and then you'll realize that, there has been a change. But how much? But how much? See if you're a person who, when faced with challenges, backs away. Says, I don't think I can do this. Or if you're someone who's given a challenge, you step up and you think, I'm going to do my very best. I may not have the knowledge or the experience of doing this, but I'll still find a way. I'll ask. I'll find it somehow. Because how you do anything is how you do everything. How our teachers used to say, when you face a problem, instead of saying "Why me?" What should you be saying? Try me. See, this is the mindset you should have as you're progressing on the path. It's not, I'm facing, say for example, let's say you have your teacher has given you something, or you have to do something which you have some sort of resistance to do, something you don't like, but your teachers have told you, or you have to do something. If your immediate reaction is to give up, something's too hard. If the first thing that comes to your head is to give up, I can't do this, then what can we say about your journey to Nibbana as well? Exact same. When it becomes too hard, you think, maybe Nibbana is not for me. Or maybe I can't attain Nibbana. This is why, you have to be, the journey to Nibbana isn't just a simple, sit down under a tree and contemplate and you become an arahant. No, it's a practical journey. You have to put yourself into problems. You have to challenge yourself to go forwards. You have to put yourself into situations that you feel uncomfortable with to progress, to see how much you have contemplated. Something that, that's something that my teacher has reminded me is, or one of my monks, one of my fellow monks have reminded me is that, so he works, meaning he is in charge of some children in the 18 minus. And so he told me, if you want to check how much you've practiced your path, come and stay with the 18 minus for 2 days. If you want to check how much you've practiced your path, come to the Noble Hearts for 3 days. And you'll see. Or come teach a lesson to at the school. Because you have to put yourself into challenges. You can think that, maybe I don't have the same desires as before. Maybe I don't have the same, I don't get angry as I used to do before. And you're saying that stuck in a room full of nothing. If you think about it, if you were put in a room that just had white walls and just a bed for you to sleep and, food that is just bland, well, you can just imagine that, you feel that you're an arahant, right? the walls are white, you know, I don't really care about the colors, you know, I don't need any songs anymore, you know, the food is bland, and so, you know, I mean, you know, taste, what is taste? Taste is just a figure of, you know, just in the mind. But the moment you step outside this room, and you come face to face with problems, now you can actually realize. The other day, one of our New Lady monks, they went and worked, spent a night at the Noble Hearts as a Rasta monk. They came back and told me the next day, you know, Abhyandra, I have lots more defilements. I have lots more defilements. Now, was he demotivated thinking, I have all of these more to do? Instead, he was motivated thinking, I have these things to do. I know what I have to do now. I have my problems. I know the solution. Now I need to practice. See, put yourself in these situations. Put yourselves and give yourselves a challenge. Don't back away. Don't shy away. Now, that doesn't mean go looking for problems. But when problems do come find you, don't shy away. Stand straight. Use the weapon of the Dhamma. Use the pure water of the Dhamma to wash it away, the defilements. This is why the journey to Nibbana is a practical journey. It's not impossible. It's very practical. Every waking moment, whenever you feel desire, aversion, delusion, you know, you have something to do. Whether you feel desire, whether you feel aversion, whether you feel delusion, whether you feel ignorance in some sort of way, you have something to do. You have, you know, there's never a time where you can say, I have nothing to do today. Today I am free. No, there cannot be. Because your mind is still there. Mind, if has ignorance, still has work to do. Still has a lot of work to do. So you don't shy away from problems. That's the thing. How you do anything is how you do absolutely everything. How you do anything is exactly how you do everything. So see how you do things. And, you know, you can take a good judgment of what sort of character you are. That's why when your teachers give you some sort of activity, a job, or a task to do, see what you think. Is your first response, I can't do that? Or is your response, I'll give it a shot? This is why we're very lucky. We're very lucky in the monastery to have someone who is there dedicated to helping you progress on your path. Seeing all the nooks and crannies that's left, that you've left behind, and tries to fill them to the maximum they possibly can. We're very lucky to have a teacher. A teacher who's able to see who you are, to ask and to prod you in the right direction, to progress on the path. If your teacher's meetings are bland, saying that it's simply, you go to a teacher's meeting, the teacher just says, do this, and that's it. Then, listen to what I have to say, and you go and tell the teacher every problem that you have, and the teacher doesn't say anything back. Understand your teacher is currently waiting. Because the teacher is waiting for what? For you to be a student. You have to use your teacher to the maximum. Whoever your teacher is. Now, when I mean teacher, I mean, you know, your spiritual teacher, the person, the people who are there to help you progress on the path. You know, use them to the maximum. You know, use them to help you find your defilements. Find where you have holes in your knowledge. You know, you're very lucky to have a teacher. Extremely fortunate. A person who's there, completely dedicated for one thing and one thing alone. Your Nibbana, your salvation. Now, you are the responsible one, but they're helping. You are responsible for your own salvation, I agree. But they're there to help. They're there to see, are you currently on the correct path? That's why, you know, if you hide your symptoms from the doctor, who is losing out? The patient. So you got a stomachache and a headache. You know, you don't want to talk about the headache. So you only talk about the stomachache and you hide the symptom of the headache. The doctor will give a diagnosis. Will diagnose you with just a stomachache. And will only give you medications for what? Stomachache. They don't know about the headache. So who's losing out? The patient. Same thing with the teacher. If you only show your teacher only one side, one specific way, or one specific character that you portray. You know, they say humans are the best actors. Right? You behave one way with one person, another way with another. But if you only show, you know, so, you know, in front of your teacher, you're being the best student, you know, you're like, oh, you know, I did this, I did that, when you haven't done any of that, and you pretend to portray this character of, I am a good student, well, the teacher will medicate you accordingly. The teacher will give you medicines accordingly. However, if you were to show the teacher who you truly are, the monster within you, now the teacher knows exactly what to do to give you the right medication. But you see, that monster doesn't like coming out. Doesn't like people knowing. Why? What happens if they found out? What happens if my teacher finds out that, you know, I get really angry when this happens? What happens to the teacher if my teacher finds out that, you know, I'm really greedy for chocolate cake? If my teacher finds out, what would the teacher think of me? What would the teacher think of me? They'll think of me to be a horrible person. Yeah, if you think that your teacher's going to think you're going to be a horrible person, well, then you're not going to say any of this. But when you show your teacher the monster within you, the teacher knows exactly how to get rid of that monster. Because your teacher is there, entirely dedicated to you. You know, your teacher has been appointed because that is a teacher. They have the qualifications to be a teacher. They have the knowledge, they have the views to help you out. Help remove that monster within. The monster of ignorance from within. They have all of that. And all you need to do is what? Show and do. They say, you need a lot of merits to have a teacher. I agree. They say, you need to have a lot of merits to have a good teacher. I agree. But I think you need more merits. Not just to have a teacher. Not just to have a good teacher. But to do what the teacher says. I mean, you know. We're very good at, I don't know, I think most people are very good at listening. I mean, think about it, you are all listening to what I am saying. right? Whenever I say something, I always see a nod, someone nodding, you know, yes, yes, yes. We're all good listeners. But how many of us are good doers? Able to do what the teacher says. That's the thing. You need merits to have a good teacher, I agree, but you need more merits to be able to have the idea of doing what the teacher says. You need more merits to be able to do what the teacher says. To actually have, not just to have a teacher, but to do. You need more merits for that. That's the thing. This journey to Nibbana, the journey to Nibbana isn't just, you know, sitting down and meditating. You know, if that is what you have in mind, that is not Nibbana. Nibbana is a practical journey, fighting against the monster from within. Your own defilements. Fighting against your own defilements. Every time a defilement comes up, you're ready to fight. Nibbana is. You know, they say, you know, success is a journey, not destination. Nibbana is the same. We all think that Nibbana is, you know, is a destination. You know, one day I'll attain Nibbana. You know, it's a destination somewhere I'll attain. No, Nibbana is not that. Nibbana is the journey. The destination is arahantship, but hey, Nibbana is not that. Nibbana is a journey. It's a fight. It's a war against yourself. The inner demons within. Fighting against your inner demons. You know, this is what we have to do. This is what we have to do. Day in, day out, this is what we have to do. Fight the inner demons within. Find out what is stopping me from being, you know, happy. And fight. Why do I feel desire? Why do I feel aversion? Why do I feel delusion? Why can I not do this? Why do I feel resistance to do this? For example, now, as humans, there are people that we like, right? There are fellow anagarikas, anagarikas, fellow shravikas, shravikas, fellow friends that we enjoy being in association with. But there's also people that we don't like. Or are you telling me that you like every single person that you meet? No, there's always a person that you like, and there's always, you know, a group of people that we like, and there's always a group of people that we don't like. Ask yourself, why do I feel resistance to talk to this person? Why do I feel resistance to talk to this person? Why can't I talk to this person? Why, when I hear his or her voice, I think, he's here, she's here. If you have that, then there's a problem. There's a fight. There's a war. Not with that person, but with who? The inner demons. Why do I think, she's here today. He's here today. Oh. You hear his voice from afar and you think, no. My entire day is ruined. You know, if you have that, there's a fight. I mean, this is not to say, you know, you still have lots of defilements, or what are you doing? You still have defilements. Why do you still have defilements? No, this is the complete opposite. I'm saying you have defilements. That's okay. I mean, that's what makes us still on the path. I mean, we are all patients. That's fine. The thing is, you have to medicate yourself. This is not something that, you know, you should be thinking, you know, I have lots more to do, you know, I'm still very new to this, you know, I don't understand, you know, how can I do all this? That's because right now you're thinking about the end result. You're thinking about how you have to get rid of all of these defilements. I'm just saying, no, don't get rid of all defilements. Get rid of one. So you're projecting into the future and thinking, you know, if I want to attain Nibbana, I have to get rid of all of these defilements. And you're trying to do all that in one mind. But instead, just get rid of one. Take one small one and get rid of it. I don't like doing this. Then, you know, think about it. Contemplate. Put it into action. See yourself get rid of just one. Next mind, get rid of another one. Don't get rid of all your defilements, right? All in one mind. Because you can't. Just take one and remove. Go through life removing one by one. And then one day, you know, all the defilements will be gone. You know, we spend far too long thinking about, you know, the end result. You know, when you're doing, you know, when you're learning, you think about the end result. When I get my degree. When you're, you know, when you're cooking, you're thinking about the end result. When I finish cooking this pasta, I don't know. When you're cleaning a place, again, you're thinking about the end result. When this looks like this. And you're trying to fit that end result and, you know, all that you have to do in a single mind. And that's why you feel really stressed. You know, when you're growing up and you have a trip tomorrow. You're going on a trip tomorrow. Right, a school trip or, you know, going somewhere. Do you remember the night before how you couldn't go sleep? Why not? You're trying to enjoy that trip now. Thinking about what can happen, how amazing it will be. But tomorrow it rains. And you can't go on the trip now. Because we take the end result, thinking about what it will be, and try to fit into this mind. And, you know, therefore you feel not just stressed, but you feel this urge, come on, please. I remember one day, as a task someone gave me when I was very little, they asked me what superpower that I wanted. The person on my left said they wanted to be invisible. The person on my right said they wanted to fly. I said I wanted a remote. A remote to fast forward time. To skip all the bad things. Because why? We always have the end result in mind. I don't want to do all this. I don't want to revise, but I want the results. I don't want to cook, but I want to eat the food. I don't want to clean, but I want to live in a clean place. So I said, I want a remote that can fast forward time. Again, the journey to Nibbana is a very practical journey. It's a very practical journey. You know, it's a journey that takes, that you have to be, it's not a journey that will happen one day. One day while sitting under a tree, meditating, one day all this comes to your head and you become an arahant like this. You know, that's a very, you know, that's wishful thinking, isn't it? But instead, it's a journey. Instead, it's a practical journey. So there's things you have to do day by day for you to get there. And if you don't do it, well, until you do, your Nibbana is waiting. Until you start doing, your Nibbana is waiting. Waiting for you to do. Waiting for you to start. Waiting for you to continue. Waiting for you to not just start, but to finish. Waiting for you to get it all over and done with. Because the mind is always there with defilements. If you think about it, right? The mind is one of the, think about it like this, right? The mind is one of the purest parts of energy. One of them. Because it comes directly from pure energy. However, because of ignorance, it alters into a different state. Because it can no longer accept the world as it is. Instead, it's trying to create a world. I mean, if you think about your six senses, or at least take the five senses for now, excluding the mind. Why do we have these five senses? Where do these five senses, why do we have five senses? You know, why can't we just have three? Or why can't we just have the one sense? Why do we have five senses? See, we have these senses because the mind has a view, doesn't it? The mind has a view that there is something fixed. There is something fixed. So, think of it like this. Imagine, a mind has a view that there is something fixed. And it's searching for it. Searching for that fixed item, that fixed object, that unique object, that separate object, is looking for it. So, to look, what does it need? To look, what does it need? It needs a sense. It needs a way to see, or a way to interact with something to check what? Whether it's fixed or not. So therefore, the mind finds a way. See, necessity is the mother of invention. The mind creates a necessity for what? Senses. Think about this, right? Your eyes are there for you to do what? To see. How far can you see? You know, have you never climbed a mountain or climbed up a tall hill at the very least, and see, and you look in the distance and you can see the horizon? Right? Sometimes you can even see Atlas holding the sky up, right? Holding the sky from, and making sure it doesn't collapse onto the earth. You've seen that, right? The horizon. Your eyes can see the distance. Now, when the mind creates an organ or creates a sense to see the most, one of the most lightest energies, what's that? Light energy. It can see. However, that's not enough. Because what it can see is not fixed. What it can see is not separate, is not unique. So the mind wants to see, wants to perceive more. Now just sight is not enough. Now the necessity comes to see something more condensed. To feel an energy that is more condensed. That's what? Sound. You can see further than you can hear, right? You can see further than you can hear. So the mind wants to now feel more condensed energy. To see what? To seek for what? Something that is unique. Something that is separate. Something that is fixed. Something that is different. But then that's not enough. But then that's not enough. It wants to feel something even more condensed. Do you remember? You know, going, you know, in in school. The teacher, you know, for science science experiment, the teacher will spray a perfume in a corner and ask you whether when you can smell it. Have you done that experiment before in school? They spray a perfume in the corner and they say, put your hand up when you can smell it. From sound, right, from light, from one of the lightest energies, the mind wanted something more condensed. They got sound. Then the mind wanted something even more condensed, which is what? Smell. You can't smell something a kilometer away. You can only smell something that's only a couple meters away. And that smell has to come into contact. Has to come into contact with the nose. Something has to come into contact. Whereas for light, or for something to see something, color doesn't need to come. Instead, light energy. Sound doesn't need to come. Only vibration needs to come. But for smell, some chemical has to actually come and hit the olfactories in the nose. So the mind wanted to feel something more condensed. To look for what? To look for what? To look for something that is separate, something unique, something different. However, could it find it? It can't. Then another necessity is created. Necessity to feel something or to perceive something more condensed. Then came the sense of what? Taste. Now there has to be an object that almost comes into contact with the tongue. See, for a smell, you know, if you're having a chocolate, you don't need to put a chocolate in your nose for you to smell chocolate. For you to hear something, you don't need to put it into your ear. You know, you can stay here and hear something in the back. To smell something, you just need to have something in the corner and you can smell it. But for taste, you know, the mind wanted something even more condensed. So what did it do? It created the sense of taste, where an object has to come in very close contact. Something more condensed. But was that enough? Then necessity came for something that is the most condensed it can possibly have. And that's the sense of what? Touch. I mean, you can't feel a hug 3 meters away, can you? To feel a hug, you have to have what? In direct contact. See, the mind is trying to find, you know, with as many senses as possible, this separate, this different, this completely separate or different or unique feel through whatever it can perceive. Because the mind is trying to perceive something that is unique. And therefore, it creates senses to feel from this very subtle energies to one of the most condensed objects, physical contact. See, think about the range. Your eyes can see, you know, several kilometers away. But you can only hear, you know, maybe 1 or 2 kilometers away. Smell, you can only smell something that's only, you know, give or take. Well, technically, when you're here and when they're making roti, you could probably smell the roti, right? You could probably smell the roti until somewhere near the water tank, which is probably about 100 or 150 meters away. You can smell something 100 or 150 meters away. But for something to be tasted, all you need to do is have something touching the tongue. For you to feel physical contact, you need something physically in contact. Do you see how much the mind had to suffer? Because when one is not enough, it created another one to find. It created another one to find, and another one, and another one. From just thoughts, because thoughts wasn't enough, because the mind arose. The first mind arose with a thought. With a thought. But that thought wasn't enough. That thought was nowhere near enough. There was more that it wanted to find. Because just thinking wasn't enough. So, if you think about it, this is how even our world system is created. From the Arupa Brahma realms, only having minds, to the Rupa Brahma realms, only having sight and sound. Where they're only focused, or their only senses are sight and sound, because that's all they need. Then you go to the karma realms. As you go down the karma realms, the focus becomes more onto the harder, the more condensed things. As you go into the four great hells, now the focus is on what? Physical contact. Physical pain. This world system is created because the mind wanted to feel what? The mind wanted to feel something that is separate, something that is unique, something that is different. That's why someone who doesn't need to find something that is separate. See, when you no longer want to feel separate, or when you no longer do bad to feel separate, when you no longer need to hurt someone to feel separate, you no longer go into the four great hells. When you no longer find pleasure in things that you feel physically, in things that you taste, in things that you smell, now you can no longer be born in the heavens. Now you're born in what? The Rupa Brahma realms. When you no longer find, you no longer search for something in the sight and sounds, now you're born in the Arupa Brahma realms. But when you no longer are in search of something that's separate, where in these realms are you born? You can no longer come back into these realms. You see, the mind is the mother here. The mother of, you can always say the mind is very innocent. The mind is extremely innocent. Because the mind only does what? Only perceives. Because if I asked you, what is it that you perceive? If you really thought about what is it that I actually can, what is it that I can perceive? You can only perceive six things. You can't perceive chocolate. You can't perceive, you know, houses. You can't perceive clothes. What can you perceive? Sights, sounds, smells, taste, touch, and thoughts. So you cannot perceive chocolate, but you can perceive a taste. You can't perceive a house, but you can perceive sight. You can't perceive a person, but you can perceive sound. But when you bunch them together, you perceive an object. When you put them together, you now perceive an object. Because I asked you, how do you know if you're alive? How do you know you're alive? Very simple. I can see. Or as you can say, you know, I'm alive because I'm breathing. can you feel that you're breathing? Or can, or how do you know you're breathing? Because you can feel what? You can feel, you know, what, the diaphragm coming down, the intercostal muscles expanding, and you can feel it. Well, technically, you don't even... Only when I talked about breathing did you realize that you're breathing. Before I asked you whether you're breathing or not, did you know that you're breathing? Because what is the mind is only there to perceive. Perceive what? Sight, sound, smells, taste, touch. So can you perceive a person? When is the last time you perceived a person? Can you perceive me? Can you perceive me? Then what is it that you can perceive? Sight. What else can you perceive? Sound. I don't know, can you perceive smell? You only can perceive what? Sights and sound. So where do you perceive me? What sense can you sense me? The mind puts together sights, sounds, and whatever it possibly can, and creates an image and says, this is who he is. So when's the last time you ate chocolate cake? When's the last time you ate chocolate cake? Yesterday night I had one of the most amazing chocolate cakes, you know, homemade. It was so good. Did you actually perceive chocolate cake? Did you taste chocolate cake? Which is even, if you think about it, that's even more crazy. I mean, did you perceive chocolate cake? You ate chocolate cake. Did you perceive chocolate cake? I mean, did you taste chocolate cake? Did you taste the chocolate cake? You had the chocolate cake. If you haven't had chocolate cake, the last thing that you had, you know, I don't know, manioc or whatever. Manioca. You know, when you eat it, you perceived chocolate cake? Well, yes, you perceived chocolate cake, but taste? Did you taste the chocolate cake? No, your tongue can't taste chocolate cake. Your tongue can never taste chocolate cake, but yet you think, this chocolate cake, so fluffy, so smooth, I don't know how do like connoisseurs have chocolate cake? Who knows? So good, so good, so amazing. Well, no, actually, the mind can't. Technically, your mind can only perceive one thing at one moment. Do we all agree with that? Your mind can only perceive one thing at one moment. So, technically speaking, at one moment, your mind can only perceive what? Sweet. The next moment, the mind can perceive what? Sour. The next moment, the mind can now perceive what? Bitter. And let's say you had a coffee cake, very bitter. Then the next mind, salty, and so on and so forth. So technically, no single mind has ever tasted chocolate cake in its life. You've never ate chocolate cake in your life. You've never tasted it. Only thing you've tasted is what? Sweet. Sour. Salty. Bitter. And so on and so forth. So today, what have you had for breakfast? What did you taste? Sweet, sour. So, but yeah, do you think, you know, today morning I had this, yesterday night I had chocolate cake, day before that I had this, and you create this massive menu of things that you've eaten. Not because you ate it, because your mind perceived. Now, it's not saying that, you know, when you're eating chocolate cake, when you perceive chocolate cake, now that's wrong. No, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying if you perceive something that is separate from everything else, what you're perceiving is a fallacy. So that doesn't mean when you're eating chocolate cake, you should be able to taste what? Sweet, sour, salty, bitter, sweet, sour, salty, bitter, and so on and so forth. No, you will perceive what? Chocolate cake. But that chocolate cake doesn't come. That taste is not something that came from that piece of whatever that you're eating. But remember, the mind wanted something that's separate. If you think about it, the more that you can perceive from it, the more that you like it. The more you can perceive from it, the more that you like it. This is why, you know, this is why things like phones are very addictive. Because if I gave you this, you can only perceive so little. And you can perceive shape, color, texture. I give it to you tomorrow as well. What are you going to perceive? Shape, color, texture. The day after, shape, color, texture. You'll get sick of it very soon. But something that you can perceive more, that can give you more perceptions, you bind onto. That's why phones are very addictive. Because why? They are something that can give you different things to perceive at every moment. I mean, that's why, you know, that's why we like people. Because they are also what? You can perceive different things at different moments. I mean, just remember the time, right? You know, you're back in your past. You know, going to school, let's say. And that was that one person that you really wanted, that you really liked. You know, it started off with a thought. I like this person. But the thought is not enough. Now what? The thought is not enough. So necessity is created for you to feel something more different, something more unique. Therefore, you thought, you know, just thinking about it is not enough. Now I have to do what? Before talking, you have to see them. And you make up an excuse somehow to see. Then when seeing is not enough, then you'll hear what? Hear them. Have you never experienced something, you know, the occasion where you see someone and, you know, you go up to talk to them and their sight or what their appearance and their voice look, or they look and sound completely different? They look and sound completely different. They look one way, but they sound completely different. For example, like, you know, they're very, very small, very small, he looks very young and whatnot, but has a very deep voice. You think, oh, that's not right. But, you know, when the mind is no longer satisfied, no longer feels different when seeing, now wants to hear. When they no longer want to hear, now they want to do what? They want to smell. Then touch. Again, the mind is always looking, and the more it can perceive, the more it can bind onto. Because then now that thing seems very separate. That's why food is also something that people get very addicted to. Because food you can see, smell, taste, touch, and also hear. Therefore, you're perceiving more than just one thing, more than just shape, color, texture. Shape, color, texture. Therefore, you bind onto it because you can feel it to be so much more separate to everything else. You can feel it to be so much more different to everything else. But how much of it is actually different? When is the last time you saw a chocolate cake? When's the last time your eyes saw chocolate cake? Just yesterday when I had chocolate cake, I saw it. Can your eyes perceive? Can your eyes see chocolate cake? No, your eyes can only do what? Pick up colors. And using those colors can pick up shape, can pick up depth using your two eyes. You know, just live in your senses. Try to live without, in just looking at what the world truly is. You know, how much of the world are you actually perceiving? Or how much of your perception is real? And how much of your perception is just mind created, mind made? Because when you realize that it's mind made, you no longer have a massive bind to that object. You no longer need that object because you understand that it's not in the object. Chocolate cake, the enjoyment of chocolate cake isn't in the chocolate cake. Instead, it's mind made. So why am I searching for something that the mind has created? Now, the very simple answer is, well, you can say that, well, I need the chocolate cake for me to perceive it. Do you though? I want you to remember the last time you ate the most delicious chocolate cake. Not the one yesterday, but the one that you had, you know, a couple months or years back, the one that's really delicious. Now you're perceiving chocolate cake. It's not there. It's not in front of you. It's funny because, you know, looking at the best chocolate cake that you've had. You know, we are always looking to experience an experience that we've had before. Don't you think so? We are always looking to experience an experience that we've experienced before. So for example, let's say, you know, that best chocolate cake that you had. Every time you eat chocolate cake, you're trying to experience that chocolate cake. That one. That's why you're comparing it to that one and you think, this chocolate cake, you know, it's not fluffy enough. You know, there's not enough, you know, in the best chocolate cake I had, there was chocolate pieces. This chocolate cake doesn't have that. And you are trying to make a mind arise that you had before. For example, you know, you can see this a lot in young children. You know how young children, they always compare their previous, you know, previous birthday parties to the one they're having now. It's funny because, you know, you can see this with young children, right? How they always compare their previous birthday to this birthday. And say, if they've done something better, they think, you know, this birthday party was amazing. If it's not as good, they think, you know, last birthday was a good birthday. This one, Amma didn't care too much. Amma doesn't love me anymore. Amma doesn't love me anymore. She has other people now. She's got my younger brother, my younger sister now. So now my birthday is not important. And they'll make up some sort of excuse because why? They are trying to compare. They want to experience that experience before. For example, you know, you are always trying to experience, you know, that, you know, you are always trying to experience, say, for example, whenever you do an exam, you are always trying to experience that experience that you had when you first did an exam and you passed very well. You want that feeling to happen again. So what do? You now work hard for that feeling. That's why, you know, you watch the same movie twice to get that feeling again. But can you ever get the same feeling again? I mean, watching a film the second time, you know, it loses its thrill because you know what's going to happen. Or that's why you go to the same place for holiday. You know, last time I went to Hawaii, it was so good. This year we're also going to Hawaii. Because why? You want to experience what? The same feeling as you did before. It's almost as though you're trying to give life to a dead body. Trying to make a zombie. Because that mind had died. Years ago. And you're trying to, you know, find a way to, you know, trying to give life to this dead mind, saying, come back, I want this mind again. Constantly looking for this. Constantly looking for to give life to a zombie. A dead mind longer. That's why, you know, truly, you can't enjoy life. You can't enjoy life because you're always looking for what? Looking for a way to experience something in the past. You know, like they say, you know, you never forget your first love. Because every time after that, what are you searching for? The first love. You're always comparing, seeing, you know, this is the best. I want something like this. You know, this is the best thing I've had. I want something like this. And you're always comparing. Always trying to compare. Always trying to experience that experience you had years ago. Months ago, days ago, several months ago. That's why you pick up the second spoon of ice cream. What for? To experience the same feeling that you had the first one. Now, for example, let's say, you know, you're eating ice cream and the first spoonful of ice cream, you know, let's say a fly had gone into it and you didn't see it. You eat it and you think, there's this sour taste. I like that. You take the next spoon and you think, oh, it's not there. Next spoon is not there. You know. But, you know, you would buy the second tub in hope for what? The first taste. In hope for that first taste. When will you get it again? When a fly somehow falls into it. But you'll never get the same taste. Who knows that fly, where that fly had been, right? You'll never get the same taste again. But yet, you're constantly in search. That's why you can't enjoy life. Because you're always trying to search. Search for something. I mean, you can't eat ice cream normally. You like ice cream, you can't eat ice cream normally. Because why? You're in search. You're searching. When will I have that first spoon? When will this taste like that taste? That's why, you know, you can't enjoy life. With ignorance and attachment, you cannot enjoy life. That's why an arhatnuan says a person who can truly enjoy life as it is, whatever it is, he or she, they're given, you know, chocolate cake. An Aizanwase can actually eat a chocolate cake happily. Because they're not comparing. They have nothing to compare to. They can taste it as it truly is. But how do we taste it? Not like before. 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 Better than before. Good. Not like before. Not like before. Not like before. But another nuance. Eats, perceives, happy, passes away. Eats, perceives, passes away. Eats, perceives, passes away. That mind is such a happy mind. You know, it doesn't even need to be things that make you happy. You go to the Dhamma hall, and Dhamma hall has completely changed. Some kid has gone around with some sprays and changed every color. All the walls are now painted in a different color. You go there and you think, no. Walls have to be what? White. That, you know, you may not have a strong attachment towards the Dhamma hall, but you have a way to compare. The wall should be white. And that's why, you know how sometimes little children, they go around drawing on walls? Why do parents feel really, really upset when children draw on walls? Because they compare. This used to be a pure white wall, so clean, so majestic. Now it's scribbled with you know, drawings of I don't know what they are. Compares. You are always comparing. And that's why an Arahat Nuhanse is the only person who can enjoy life. Everyone else? Always in search of comparing with something else. That's why comparison is the thief of joy. That's why comparison is the thief of joy. The only way you can stop comparing is when you realize the true nature of nature. When you realize this object isn't unique. When you realize this object isn't separate, you're able to accept nature as nature. You're able to accept chocolate cake as chocolate cake. You're able to accept the world as it truly is. And there and then, you're able to enjoy the rest of life. See, no amount of money can give you that. No amount of people can give you that. No amount of things can give you that. Technically, the more you have, the more you worry. The more you collect, the more you have to think. Think about this, right? You have one car. Now all you have to do is worry about that one car. Oh, it's dirty, you have to clean it. No, it's scratched, I have to, you know, paint over it, I don't know. Oh, it's dented, I have to get it fixed. Right, you're comparing it to the perfect car that you had when you bought it. Then, if you had three cars, that's three times the worry. I mean, you can pay someone to fix it, but can you pay your worries away? Can you pay, you know, you can pay someone to fix it when it's broken. But can you pay someone to take your suffering away? You know, I'll give you, you know, 300 rupees. Oh, no, not 300. 300,000 rupees. If you can take away half, just half of my suffering. Half of my worries away. Can you pay someone to do that? This is why. This is your responsibility. It's up to you. No one can force you. No one can, you know, pull you along on this journey. The journey can only be done by you and you alone. No one else. like I said, as we began, right? This journey is practical. Don't let a moment go to waste. Don't let a challenge go to waste. Challenge yourself. I'm going to try my very best to get rid of this attachment. You know, give yourself a goal. By the end of this month, I'm going to focus on this defilement I have. You know, ask your teacher to challenge you. For example, if you're someone that you know has a massive ego, see if you can challenge yourself to wash a toilet. Not the one at home. Let's say one of ours. See if you can do it. If you're someone who finds it very difficult in associating people, challenge yourself. See if you can talk to a person. Give yourself the challenge. Look for your defilements. Don't wait for it. Don't just, you know, think that all of this will disappear one day. No. You have to work for it. Defilements, you have to work to get rid of it. They won't disappear. That's why identifying your defilements is half the problem. I mean, actually, identifying your defilements is almost as if 80% of the problem is gone. Because you know now. Once you know it, you know how to solve. You have solutions. If you don't know, you have your teachers. If you don't know, you know, we have, you know, in our monastery, how many sermons do we do a week? I can't remember the number that Guru Hamdar keeps giving us. Do you remember? How many sermons do we do a month? Do you remember? No. Like give or take more than 1,000 a month. Online, offline, in person, you know, recordings, whatnot. I mean, these are, you know, things that are there to help. I don't think it's 1,000, not yet. But close. I don't know. Maybe not 1,000. I'm doubting it now. Hold up. But still. You know. Give yourself the challenge. Don't let your defilements take control of you. You find your defilements. Find your defilements. Finding it, it's half the problem. Then you have to go and, you know, find the solution. You have the Dhamma. You have a teacher. This is Nibbana. Take pleasure in finding your defilements. I mean, that sounds so off, doesn't it? Have pleasure in finding defilements? Well, defilements are bad. Why should I be happy when I find my defilements? No, be happy when you find it. Because you know now what you have to do. Or else when you go to the Valimalwa, right, and you're there and you don't know your defilements, you're just there thinking, this world is anicca, this world is dukkha, this world is anatta. And you're just, you know, trying to shoot in the dark. But when you know your defilements, you can see it and you know what it is. And now you know exactly what you have to do. Where you have to put the medicine. That's why understanding the problem is half the solution. So seek, and you shall find. Seek and you shall find. Always on the lookout for your defilements. Don't let a moment go to waste. Okay, so today we have Dakineya, so I have to end early. Right. Because I need to send you all off to prepare for a great procession. So it's a great opportunity for us to do as many merits as possible. Because, you know, the path to Nibbana is... I was talking with some of our monks the other day, and we're talking about how much merits we need daily to live in the monastery. Because they say, you know, the event of a Buddha is rare. So being born in the time of the Buddha has to be, you know, has to cost a lot of what? Merits. And then they say the Dhamma, the preaching of the Dhamma is rare. So being in a place where the Dhamma is there also costs a lot of what? Merits. But being surrounded by the Mahasangha, surrounded by people who are, you know, who are trying their very best and contemplating and preaching and doing all that, also costs what? A lot of merits. So for as long as I'm alive, every moment I'm alive, my merits are spent because of the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Every moment. Because if I don't have enough merits, then I can't be born, or I can't be alive in the event of a Buddha, or event of the Buddha's ministry at least. Simply, then that means I can no longer be alive. Or if I don't have enough merits, well, I won't be able to be with Dhamma or the Mahasangha. That's why merits are incredibly, incredibly important. Because every moment you're alive, you're using up what? The merits. So this is why, you know, these ceremonies that we have, join them and do them with the fullest heart. You know, whenever you can, go and accumulate as much merits as possible. Your life should be simply a place. Your life should be a place where you can pluck the fruits of merits. Where you plant and pluck these plants, these fruit, these merits. So you plant, meaning you do meritorious activities, and you reap the rewards. That's what your life should be. Surrounded by such great people, such amazing people. So this is why, you know, do merits to the maximum you possibly can. Never miss an opportunity to do merits. Never miss an opportunity. Don't think it's someone else's, you know, opportunity. No. Help them. If you can't do it, help them do it. Whether physically or mentally. Because merits can be accumulated whether you do it physically or whether you do it mentally. Or if you do it verbally. You know how powerful a sadhukara is, right? Just the word sadhu, sadhu, how powerful that is. So accumulate as much merits as possible. Contemplate. Practice the path. And then attain the supreme bliss and nibbana. Okay. Let's take a few moments to transfer merits and conclude today's sermon. Let's take a moment to transfer the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, Let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's chant for the master bhikshu-bhikshunis, upasakas, upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to a generation of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, and to comprehend Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all of the chief prelates of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and committed themselves to the benefit of all sentient beings. Let's not forget, among them will be the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to Guru Sananse, as well as all the monks resident in the monastery, as well as the Anagarikas attached to the monastery. As well as take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who made great efforts to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be that by transliterating sermon, sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of the merits, if any have been born in the willful planes, may they redeem themselves and born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits to be required to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha or shelter, alms, roads, medicines, as well as those who pass in their no-hugs and their well wishes. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, to all that have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical or mental ailments. May they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take one chance of merits to devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primarily Sakadeva, as well as numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let's not forget, among them will be our garden deities who keep watch over all of us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all that has been friends and family to us in this long journey in Sansara. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all this lost life in the war be the friend of foe. Rejoice in the merits acquired today. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those who have lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends of home to us in the same long journey in Sansara. May by the power of the merits, if any have been born in the willful planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful planes. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss in Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and the blessing of all the merits acquired the other day, we may witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arhat Mahinvanses in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired the other day, you and I and everyone who made this program a success become an Arhatinvanse or an Arhat Mahinvanse in this very life in the era of the Gautama's or Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of Chupacham be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnin midetnva Dvesha ginnin midetnva Moha ginnin midetnva Nibbhana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitnva Nibbhana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitnva මම ද සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්වයෝ නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිත තර වෙත්වා නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිත තර වෙත්වා නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිත තර වෙත්වා රාග ගිනි නිවේවා ද්වේෂ ගිනි නිවේවා මෝහ ගිනි නිවේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා තුන්වන්ගේ සුසියනන්ත මහගුණ බලෙන් සිය ලෝක සිය සත්‍යෝම නිබ්බාන පමසකින් සුගතයෙත්.